interested in what this material does given the circumstances that I'm creating for it. So before I soak it, it's a very soft material, and I am interested in the way that it naturally coils. I mean, it comes off of a spool. So there are other works in the exhibition that are the same material that's been soaked and then coiled in that natural way. But as do many fibers, this really has a tendency to tangle and twist and turn. And so I try to work with that energy, the sort of dynamic energy that line that has.
Mm-hmm. Do you look at it now and you follow it like a line, like somebody drew it?
Well, that's a good question. I think while I'm making the work, there's so much of it. I mean, I tend to take a quantity that will, in a way, defy your ability to follow it completely. And I think that's unconsciously one of the things that I'm doing. I would do something different in the arrangement of it if I wanted you to be able to follow the line completely all the way through. There's quite a lot of material there.
Mm-hmm. There are pictures of it on kboo.fm under Art Focus. It's worth taking a look because it's quite hard to describe. But the gallery, a lot of the walls are taken up with prints, or you call them drawings, right? They're the cord sort of pressed onto white paper, usually white paper. And there's a whole series of them, transmission state. How did they come about?
The transmission states preceded the larger medium wall sculptures, and they are a series of drawings that numbers 35. They're made on Kozo paper, which is a thin Japanese paper. I like it for its semi-translucency and the soft whiteness of it, and it to make this group of drawings, I worked with the smaller coiled, ink-soaked objects, and they are sculptural objects in the exhibition, but they are really the drawing implements that help me make these works. So the process is to lay out a sheet or two of Kozo. Underneath, I lay a sheet of drafting film, and then I rest the soaked fibers, either coiled or semi-tangled, on the paper, and the ink transmits through. And I use the term transmission states to signal that there's a process of transference, but it really soaks through and saturates all the way, and something is both lost and gained in that process from one surface to another.
Mm-hmm. And that material underneath, that paper, what do you call that? The sort of translucent paper?
The drafting film that's underneath. That's really to catch, because the ink soaks all the way through. The drawings that are made on the bottom on the drafting film are called residual states. There's often an inky residue on there, and when I pull the transmission states off the top of the drafting film, often I will pick up or sort of blot the drafting film pieces, and that creates yet another drawing. So through this process, like the process we described before, multiple works are being made simultaneously, and I'm really interested in that moment. These drawings and many of the other drawing series that I work on are events, and they really focus my attention and my action in the studio around time. And some of them are slow, and some of them continue on while I'm not in the studio. The transmission states are often left overnight or for multiple days. And some of my drawing processes that we'll discuss in a bit here are really fast or almost immediate.
Mm-hmm.
So time is sort of an abiding issue for me.
If you have the small coils of cord that have been used sitting on pedestals like sculptures, and then you have the drawings that they made on the wall nearby. If you had to keep one and throw one lot out, which would you keep?
I don't think I can answer the question. they're so interrelated for me. In a lot of this work, I'm interested in the open-endedness that I can create through a series of processes. And I think while I was making the transmission states, I didn't know at that time how I would present the intermediaries or the sculptural objects. And it took me a while to resolve that they would be standalone pieces in an exhibition. You know, there were some really specific decisions in the exhibition design that I worked on with the curator Terry Hopkins and the installer Todd Clark and Blake Schell, the new curator at the Art Gym, also had a really important role. And we laid out the gallery in such a way that you could kind of meander or weave through. There are three freestanding walls that have that create a path. A series of pathways.
Yeah, they're open at either end, so you can wend your way, looking at all the surfaces. And what is a repeating line progression?
So in the second sort of gallery space, after you pass through the transmission states and you experience the intermediaries, which made the transmission states, opposite that is a group of works, six drawings made on drafting film that are made using this same process where I soak cord. In this case, it's a much finer gauge cord. It's about a quarter of an inch. So the line weight is smaller, and I've run them down the center of the page, laid them down the center of the page, and in three steps that took that sort of played out in my studio over the course of about 3 weeks. I laid a sheet of drafting film down, then a cord down the middle, and then another sheet of drafting film, and so that, you know, that moment is. Those two drawings are at the center of the wall, and then moving out from that pair is a second pair that was made several days later by taking the wet cords out and replacing them. And In this series, I was experimenting with switching out the cords, switching out wet cords for dry cords, and adding pressure to the later ones. So when you if you get to the gallery, what you'll see at the outside, the outer two pair of drawings are there's just a lot more ink that's spread out and dried on, and the cords dried on the drafting film. And you know, usually my series are very open-ended, and often I will select works from a large group of drawings to and rearrange them for a given exhibition. This was a much more focused presentation to reveal something about the process.
Right. So people who know your work, you've done a lot of work with other fabrics and other, what do you call them? Braids, strings?
Fibers.
Different colors, different relationships. And then this is all, it's rather more austere. Everything's black and white, or in some cases silver. Is this supposed to show something about your emotional state at this time? Is it that anthropomorphic?
It would be really hard to describe my emotions as black and white, but it's true that I used to work with more color. I had an exhibition at Nine Gallery in 2008 that included and incorporated many fibers with a lot of different color relationships in the exhibition. And I don't know exactly why I've come to work with in such a monochromatic way. I mean, for me, there's a lot of variation just in the tonal range, and I think maybe it's the focus on line and really kind of isolating some of the issues around transmission and transference and the gestural movement of what I'm doing. I hope to get back to color when the time is right, or when I feel it.
You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My name is Joseph Gallivan, and my guest this week is Heather Watkins. She's an artist with a show at the Art Gym at Merrillhurst University. which is on now through April the 2nd. Heather, what do you listen to when you're working, and what have you brought in for us today to hear?
I often work without music on. I'll listen to podcasts like Radiolab or, the news on any variety of stations. But I did bring in some music that I listen to en route to the studio, kind of as a way to transition from wherever I've been into a different space. And this is Bach's Cello Suites. I think we're going to play the first.
Mm-hmm. Suite number one in G major. Is J.S. Bach, Cello Suites, Suite number one in G major, played by Pierre Fournier. You also had another version of this that we couldn't play, but what is that?
I have several versions of it, and one that that means a lot to me was given to me by my friend Reiko Hillier, and it's a performance that her late father did of the Cello Suites. He was a founding member of the Juilliard Quartet, and so I like to kind of keep it in rotation. I like the idea of listening to the same piece of music, and this music in particular, the Cello Suites, has many different sort of sections to it, and then hearing it performed by different musicians.
Mm-hmm. One of your preoccupations is the way your body works as you're making the work. So there's a series. They're black print paper with black ink, patterns of like kind of rivulets of ink. What's that series called, and how did you make them?
That series is called Surfacing, and it started I began the series in 2008. It's part of made by a process that I've used in a number of series. I pour black ink onto the paper, holding the paper horizontally. I'm often working down on the floor or on a table. And then I begin to move the paper, first very slowly. And as I move the paper, tilting it or bending it, the ink starts to flow around and often very quickly splits into several lines. And then for the rest of the time that I'm working on that drawing, which can be, 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, depending on how long I decide to hold a certain area, I'm just completely focused on the event of that drawing happening, the time during which it's happening, and managing where the lines go and where they don't go. And sometimes I have a lot of control of that, and sometimes something happens. It's gravity and it's fluidity, and I can't control absolutely all of that.
Mm-hmm.
The series is ongoing. There are almost 100 drawings to date, and the first exhibition of it was a sequence at the Lumber Room in the Interior Margins exhibition, curated by Stephanie Snyder in 2011, and that was where the sequence moved across three walls around two corners, and resolving the piece for that exhibition really allowed me to understand the work and to put some parameters around it for future exhibitions.
Mm-hmm. So, how do you divide up your day? How do you know whether you're going to be doing that in the day or something with cord, or how do you decide?
That's a great question. Some of it is deadline motivated. If I have a specific project I'm working toward, And I need to, you know, get something photographed. That will come first. But apart from that, I guess it's just intuitive.
Mm-hmm. So if you got a nice clear day in the studio, no problems, will you move around between types of drawing or do one all day?
Sometimes. I mean, it's maybe more seasonal than daily for me. There was a period of time when I was working on the thread drawings that are in the exhibition, and those, you know, when we were talking earlier about time in relationship to my work, those I can come and go. I can pick up the thread and make some large looping stitches through the paper and then leave it for a while and look at it. The ink flow drawings and some of the work with soaked cords really requires more of a span of time because I need to tend it and there's some sort of preparation and cleanup. But if I have that amount of time, then I can usually leave those. Mm-hmm. But the surfacing, I work in kind of sessions. You know, I'll get into a rhythm. There's a real kind of embodied gesture to making that work. And I use a number of different inks, black inks. Mm-hmm. That's not something I would just start to do and then not get back to it. It's usually over the course of several days or, you know, a couple of weeks when I'll make four or five, and then the next day I'll make three or four, and mm-hmm. you know, I kind of I need to get into a mind state where I can keep going with that.
So these are surfacing black on black, a lot of them. So you're looking at ink that's shiny in the middle or has bled out a little bit or has got dry in certain areas. But are you more interested in the kind of zone your mind goes to while you're making them, you know, the sort of concentration state than in the final product?
Definitely. Although the way that I've gone about presenting the work, and this is why I mentioned it was really key to have an opportunity to present in an exhibition, the surfacing sequence at the Lumber Room and in subsequent exhibitions, is that there's the making of the work, and then there's another phase during which I'm looking at it and rearranging it in the studio. So I move those works around in grids to see relationships between, as you said, some of the ink is reflective, some of it's very absorbent and mottled, and so I'm looking at the relationships that you have when you're standing right in front of it and moving past it. That's another reason why I show these in large grids, so that you can experience it by activating your own body. And there's something that happens in the peripheral zone, both of your vision and kind of all of your body awareness as you're walking past it, that's interesting to me.
What happens?
I think the drawings flicker in and out. I had a friend in the studio who suggested at one point before I had shown them that I might have a swinging light bulb in front of them so that you could experience the different changing kinds of light across them. But you can essentially do that by walking back and forth mm-hmm. and kind of moving slowly or quickly.
And they have a texture where the ink has made the paper buckle and bend, and the ink sticks up itself because it has a certain depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been asked if somebody who was looking at them from afar, if it was an embroidered piece of paper, because there is a real dimensionality in some of them. Some of the inks I use have more of a watery content, and the paper absorbs that, and that changes the paper, changes the surface.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you prefer people to linger a bit. This is not a drive-by show. You've got to look and walk slowly.
Well, I want anyone to experience the work in whatever way they like to experience work. But I think there is something about slowness that is inherent to my process, and So it would make sense to me that a viewer might feel that or sense that in looking at it, and maybe that would play out in the way that they view it.
Mm-hmm. And talking to you, it seemed like you are sort of totally hands-off as to the meaning of the work or what the effect of the work is on the viewer. You don't dictate. Your titles are really tell it much, you know. That you're not really pushing the viewer into thinking anything. So is that correct?
I don't know. It feels... I feel like the task of titling is so challenging. And part of that, I think, is because when I'm making the work, I feel like I'm in a fairly nonverbal state. And then the rest of the time after making the drawings up till they're presented in an exhibition or, you know, submitted in some visual, you know, in some visual form is an effort to articulate something about them that is true for me. Mm-hmm. So when I'm making the surfacing drawings, for example, the best that I could come to was to find a term that indicates something about the process. For me, surfacing, and many of my titles have dual or multiple meanings. Surfacing both sort of describes the surface, but it's a verb, and so it describes an activity also. And there's a little bit of a wordplay and a trick in there. So.
So I asked you whether this is all about transference or, you know, some kind of psychoanalytical term, but you're not going there.
I don't mind if you read it that way, but that's not, none of this has a singular meaning, and so I think that's why I reach for language that that can suggest one thing and then another thing and then another thing. The title for the show is Recurrent Work, and in that I wanted to signal kind of the experience of time and something that's turning and turning again. And then there's a wordplay with the idea, you know, often an exhibition might be titled mm-hmm. Current Work. So,
recurrent.
So it goes in some different directions, hopefully.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Heather Watkins. Her show, Recurrent Work, is on at the Art Gym at Merrillhurst University, now until April the 2nd. Thanks very much for coming in, Heather.
Thank you, Joseph.
Andy Warhol is a scream.
Hi, I'm your host for The Union of Time Thieves, a new radio exploration of urban life. This episode, we will take a look at monuments, what they are, how they affect us, and how we can reclaim them. The Union of Time Thieves will be on the fourth Monday of each month from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to Noon Headlines on KBOO News for Tuesday, March 18th. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced today that Crimea and Sebastopol will now be a part of the Russian Federation. President Putin called the peninsula integral to Russia. A vote took place on Sunday in which Crimea and Sebastopol decided to break away from Ukraine. pro-Russia forces have occupied Crimea since late February. Meanwhile, the United States and European Union have criticized the move. On Monday, President Obama announced that he considered the referendum in Crimea a violation of the Ukrainian Constitution and an affront to Ukrainian sovereignty and self-determination. The president announced sanctions against specific individuals that he called responsible for undermining the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and government of Ukraine. The EU announced its own list of sanctions against individuals. A suicide bombing killed at least 15 people in northern Afghanistan today. The attack occurred at a busy market in Maimana, the capital of the Faryab province, according to provincial governor Batash. According to the governor, the bomber rode into the market on a three-wheeled motorcycle and detonated explosives near the market's entrance. At least 15 people are known to have been killed by the blast and another 27 wounded. A group of journalists and organizations filed a lawsuit in federal court yesterday challenging Idaho's so-called ag-gag law. The law was passed in February and criminalized filming or recording agricultural operations without permission. Under the new law, those who are convicted would face up to a year in jail. This is double the maximum penalty of animal cruelty under Idaho law. The lawsuit, filed by organizations like the Center for Food Safety and the American Civil Liberties Union, among others, alleges that the new law violates the Constitution's protections of free speech and a free press. This law, and others like it passed in 12 states, was passed in response to a video released by an animal rights group that showed workers at the Betancourt Dairy beating, stomping, and sexually abusing cows in 2012. An activist secretly filmed the abuse after getting a job at the dairy. Locally, the Cully Association of Neighbors awarded 6 grants totaling $2,000 to residents working to improve the neighborhood. In recent years, the association has invested money in larger scale projects like the improvements to Cully Boulevard and in support of the Cully Community Market. This was the first time the Cully Association of Neighbors awarded small scale grants. Recipients of the grants proposed projects like renovations to the Cully Grange, a small free library, an herb garden, support for the Cully Bike Fair, and for the Day of the Children, Dia de los Niños celebration. In February, Portland Parks and Recreation announced that it will contribute $1.25 million for a future park in the Cully neighborhood. You've been listening to Noon Headlines on KBOO News. I'm Kelly Sunrose. For more local, national, and global news produced right here in our Portland studios, tune in weekdays at 5 p.m.
Siempre que me llaman, llego listo para la parranda. que tiene un